What you're going to hear are letters and poetry, mostly sonnets, but other things, from Michelangelo. And I've lengthened the screen so that we can have a little bigger image. Doesn't make any difference when Rich shows. You can't see anything anyway. What you see is a whole great big smash. But I want you to look closely. So. Michelangelo is one of the great triumvirate who appeared in Italy early in the 16th century. Of the three giants, the other two being Leonardo, da Vinci, and Raphael, Michelangelo stands out as the most developed artist, primarily because he accomplished more pieces than any of the others. But perhaps more importantly, he gave us more of the spirit of the Renaissance than either Raphael or Leonardo. Raphael was called Il Divino, that is, the Divine One, even in his own time. But his fame, and thus perhaps his contribution, rests on a classical refinement of the nature of man rather than on any deep probings that Leonardo and Michelangelo accomplished. Both Leonardo and Michelangelo were very active in many pursuits. Besides paintings and sculpture, both were active in architectural designs. Both left volumes of writing for us. But these two great contributors to man's role in history are very different. Leonardo was the great theorist, while Michelangelo was the great practitioner. Tonight I'm going to flood the screen with works of Michelangelo. You're probably going to see about 150 slides in an hour. Now, I couldn't do that if I was going to be talking on Leonardo, primarily because he simply didn't do very many pieces. He thought about them, he wrote about them, but he did not bring them to fruition. An example of the contrast between the two is made if I can try to recall part of Leonardo's writings. And this is typical. In one of his notebooks, he's describing how to paint a battle scene. And he gives excruciating detail about the density of the air at the ground level is, say, 50%. By the time you rise 3 inches above the ground, you have lost some of the image, and as you rise higher, you regain a little more. And he had studied what happens as people walk and animals move in dirt, how at the very base you can sometimes see the feet, but you get about an inch above and the dust starts to gather, then it starts to dissipate. Well, this is the kind of detailed study that he went into before he laid out a pencil to a piece of paper concerning a painting. And in a real sense, his notebooks are substitutes for his paintings and his work in other media. He seldom finished a piece. He often never even started one, even after he'd received a commission to do it. I believe the reason for this is that after Leonardo had analyzed so totally how to represent something, he lost interest in the project. And working on it physically, that is, bringing it into being, was simply a lot of wasted time, and he'd rather be studying something else. As will be apparent from Michelangelo's writings, the opposite is true. Michelangelo seldom writes about specific works of art in any detail. For him, the analysis, the search, the discovery came about only in working with materials. His writings are in two general forms, letters and poetry, and as I said, the sonnet form dominates. About 500 of his letters survive, most of them in autograph form that is authenticated. They're filled with comments on money, petty events, some gripes, some complaints, but we're going to look in vain for any elucidation about his art. Now, this is very different from Van Gogh, whom some of you might have heard me read his letters last week. Van Gogh wrote tremendously about the paintings, but Michelangelo is not really very much concerned in his letters. His letters are mostly simple and direct. They're not so polished as are his works of poetry or his works of marble. He wrote a great number to his father, Lodovico, many to his two brothers, Buonarroto, who was his youngest brother and worked in a wool shop, and Leonardo, an older brother who became a monk. Many of Michelangelo's poems are addressed also to Vittoria Colonna, who was a widow of the Duke of Pescara, and she's been characterized by other Renaissance writers as a completely spiritual woman. To illuminate a little bit of Michelangelo, let me mention a little bit about this last relationship with Vittoria Colonna. The then prevailing philosophy was Neoplatonism, and there is no indication at all of any kind of sexual attraction between the two, and their letters and poetry reveal an ideal Neoplatonic relationship in which spiritual union has driven completely out of their relationship any notion of the physical. However, this is a major paradox in Michelangelo's life, because the physical was omnipresent in his thoughts. This will be apparent in his works of art. If they're paintings, sculpture, architecture, even in his own life, Michelangelo was always conscious of his own body. In a letter in 1517, he wrote to an agent of Pope Leo X, and he complained of his age. He was then 42, and he had more of his life ahead of him at that time than he had behind him. Other personalities his letters are addressed to are Giorgio Vasari, who was a second-rate painter, but a great admirer of Michelangelo's. More important to us, Vasari was the first writer of the biographies of major Renaissance artists. Pope Julius II, one of the letters will be addressed to him. Julius II was the great pope who, for about a decade in the early part of the 16th century, called all the great artists to Rome, and the Sistine Chapel, among other things, is the result of Julius's demands. Also, the St. Peter's that we now see today was begun because of Julius's interest. It's not necessary, though, that you identify the people to whom the letters are written, or even some of the names that will come up in the letters. I'm not going to discuss them or identify them. I don't want you to make any kind of one-to-one relationship between the letters and the poetry and the images which you find on the screen. Not only would that be impossible in most instances, simply because Michelangelo is not writing about his art, but if you do that, you're going to lose the image of Michelangelo that I'd like you to get tonight when you just listen to his words and look at the images. I will be reading his writings and showing his art essentially in chronological order, so that they not only will parallel each other, but they do move down his life. I will infrequently make comments about the works on the screen. Mostly I want you to hear Michelangelo's own words. While I'm reading this first letter, which is not really a letter, it's a part of a book that Vasari wrote on Michelangelo, I will be placing on the screen a number of works, some of which will be very familiar to you, which are the very early pieces of Michelangelo. So just look at those as I read you about Vasari on Michelangelo. This is a portrait bust of Michelangelo. And that's an out-of-focus slide, which I'll have to go up, I'm sorry, and fix. Thought I had it read. This is on the right is a tomb of Michelangelo designed by Vasari, who will be giving you the first words I'll give you in a minute. Hold on. This is Vasari writing on Michelangelo. While the artists who came after Giotto were doing their best to imitate and to understand nature, bending every faculty to increase that high comprehension sometimes called intelligence, the Almighty took pity on their often fruitless labor. He resolved to send to earth a spirit capable of supreme expression in all the arts, one able to give form to painting, perfection to sculpture, and grandeur to architecture. The Almighty Creator also graciously endowed this chosen one with an understanding of philosophy and with the grace of poetry. And because he had observed that in Tuscany men were more zealous in study, more diligent in labor than in the rest of Italy, he decreed that Florence should be the birthplace of this divinely endowed spirit. In the Casatino, therefore, in 1475, a son was born to Signor Lodovico di Leonardo di Buonarroti Simoni, a descendant of the noble family of the Counts of Canossa. The child's mother was also of a very good family. Lodovico was then mayor of Chiuse Caprese, near the spot where St. Francis of Assisi received the stigmata. Moved by compelling impulse, the father named the boy Michelangelo. This is Florence on the right, and the early pieces of Michelangelo's life now. This is the only piece Michelangelo signed. After it had been finished, because people were making remarks about his talent, he snuck into the area where it was standing and chiseled across the band on the Madonna's breast, I, Michelangelo, sculptor, made this. This is the first painting of Michelangelo's. The great cartoon commissioned by the city of Florence to commemorate a battle with Siena. I never got any further than this, and this is even a second or third rate copy. The works are a kind of litany of handsome Madonnas. This is the Bruges Madonna. This is the very young, youthful Pitti Madonna. Excuse me?
What material?
These are all marble. Every piece of sculpture is marble, yeah. And this is for Karin. This is to Giuliano da San Gallo, papal architect in Rome. Giuliano, I have learned from one of yours how the Pope took my departure badly and how His Holiness is going to make a deposit and do what he had agreed, and that I should come back and not be doubtful about anything. As for my departure, it's true that on Holy Saturday, I heard the Pope, speaking at a table with a jeweler and the master of ceremonies, say he didn't want to spend a penny more, either on large or small stones, which amazed me a good deal, since before I left, I asked him for part of what I needed for going on with the work. His Holiness answered me that I should come back Monday. I came back there Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, and Thursday, and finally on Friday morning, I was sent out. Because I was chased away. And the fellow who sent me out of there said he knew me, but those were his orders. So, since I'd heard those words on Saturday, and then seeing the result, I got extremely desperate. This was not the entire cause of my departure. There was also another thing which I don't want to write about. Suffice it that it made me think if I stayed in Rome, my tomb would be built before the Pope's. And this was the cause of my sudden departure. Now, you write me on the Pope's behalf. And thus you will read this to the Pope, and His Holiness should know that I am more disposed than ever to go on with this work. If he wants the tomb built, no matter what, it shouldn't bother him where I build it, so long as at the end of 5 years we've agreed on, it's put in St. Peter's. Wherever he likes, in St. Peter's. It's a fine thing, I have promised. I am certain if it's made, the whole world will not have its equal. Now, if His Holiness wants to go on, he should place that deposit here in Florence. I'll write him where. I have many marbles in order in Carrara, where I shall have them brought here. I also shall have those brought here that I have there, although it would be quite a disadvantage to me. It wouldn't bother me if I could do the work here. I would send the things as they were done, piece by piece, in such a way that His Holiness would be pleased, just as if I stayed in Rome, or more so since he would see things done without having anyone bother about them. And as for that money and the work, I'll obligate myself as His Holiness wishes. I shall give him whatever security he asks here in Florence, be it what it will. I'll guarantee it no matter what, and all Florence should be enough. I have this to tell you, too. It's not possible that I could do that work in Rome for this price, as I can here, on account of the many advantages available which don't exist there. Besides, I'll do it better and more lovingly, because I shan't have to think about so many things. In the meantime, my dear Giuliano, I ask you to make me an answer, and quickly, there's nothing else. May the 2nd, 1506, yours, Michelangelo, sculptor in Florence. Michelangelo's great sadness was the tomb of Julius. He was commissioned that. It's the commission he wanted to maintain more than any other in his whole life, and it was the commission that he was not allowed to finish because the family, after Julius' death, withdrew the commission and kept needling him. To Lodovico di Buonarroti Simoni in Florence, dearest father, I have today received a letter of yours, which, when I had grasped its meaning, disturbed me very much. I have no doubt you are more alarmed and fearful than need be. I should be glad if you'd let me know what you think she can do to you. And that is, what is the worst she can do if she uses every means in her power? The she here is the widow of Lodovico's brother, who is suing the family to recover her dowry. There's nothing else I can say to you. It upsets me to hear that you are in such a state of fear. I therefore urge you to make good preparation for your defense. Get proper advice, and then think about it no more. For if she were to take away everything you have in the world, you would not lack the means to live and be comfortable, if there's no one else but me. So keep up your spirits. I'm still in a great quandary, because it's now a year since I had a grosso from this pope, and I don't ask for anything because my work doesn't seem to me to go ahead. And I certainly doesn't go ahead in any way that merits it. This is due to the difficulty of the work, also because it is not my profession. In consequence, I lose my time fruitlessly. May God help me. If you are in need of money, go to the Spedalingo. Let him give you up to 15 ducats, and let me know what remains. That painter, Jacopo, whom I got to come here, left recently, and as he has been complaining about me here, I suppose he'll also complain in Florence. Turn a deaf ear and leave it at that. He was wrong 1,000 times over, and I have every cause to complain about him. Pretend not to notice him. Tell Buonarroto I'll reply to him another time. On the 7th day of January, your Michelangelo in Rome. And what you're looking at is how Michelangelo was spending his time fruitlessly. This is a sonnet written to John of Pistoia about his painting on the Sistine ceiling. And here's the sonnet with a little cartoon that Michelangelo drew of himself painting on the right-hand corner. I've got myself a goiter from this string, as water gives the cats in Lombardy, or maybe it's in some other country. My belly's pushed by force beneath my chin. My beard toward heaven, and I feel the back of my brain upon my neck. I grow the breast of a harpy. My brush above my face continually makes it a splendid floor by dripping down. My loins have penetrated to my paunch. My rump's a crupper as a counterweight, and pointless the unseeing steps I go. In front of me, my skin is being stretched while it folds up behind and forms a knot, and I am bending like a Syrian bow. And judgment hence must grow, born in the mind, peculiar and untrue. You cannot shoot well when the gun's askew. John, come to the rescue of my dead painting now and of my honor. I'm not in a good place, and I'm no painter. He hated painting. One measure of the kinds of energy spent by Michelangelo on the Sistine ceiling is found if we are to compare a study on the right for one of the Sibyls. These are the sort of in between the Old and the New Testament prophets. And the Libyan Sibyl, which you see on the left, has remaining for us a preparatory sketch by Michelangelo on the right. Now remember, this is about 60, 70 feet in the air. You can't see the figure very well, even under the best of circumstances. But in his preparatory drawing, if you look closely, you'll find that he studied, among other things, the left big toe in three different positions so that he would get it accurately for holding the weight of this handsome figure as it opens one of its books of prophecy. Each of the toes in a little different attitude. This on the left is what the original scheme of Michelangelo's was for the tomb of Julius II. One of the minor figures in this tomb, so secondary that it was placed up on the second story, is now the central figure of the tomb as it exists today. You see on the right, I began it a few slides back, that is the figure of Moses. It's placed in a small church. Very few people go to, except to see the Moses, of course, which is a cause enough. But the church itself is very uninteresting and uninspiring. It was the church in which Julius was a priest on entering the service in Rome, the Church of St. Peter in Chains. And on the right, you see the tomb of Julius, and on the left, you see the tomb as envisioned by Michelangelo and agreed upon by Julius. This is a letter to Lodovico, his father, in October 1512. "My very dear father, from your last I learned how things are going there, though I knew part of it before. It's necessary to have patience, trust in God, repent one's errors, and these adversities come from nothing other than those, and especially from pride and ingratitude, for I never dealt with people more unfair and prouder than the Florentines. So if justice comes, it's only right. Of the 60 ducats you tell me you have to pay, I find it dishonest and suffered very much over it. Still, it's necessary to have patience as long as it may please God. I shall write two lines to Giuliano de' Medici, which will be enclosed here. Read them, and if you'd like to take them to him, take them, and you'll see if they help at all. If they don't help, consider whether what we might have that could be sold, and we can go and live elsewhere." It seems as though the Medici family was now back in power, and they appeared to have fined the Buonarroti family because they'd been sympathetic to Savonarola, who, of course, was antagonistic to the Medici. Apparently, Michelangelo's letter was successful, as scholars tell us, because the family was restored to favor. "In addition, if you should see that you were treated worse than other people, make an effort not to pay. Sooner let what you have be taken away. Let me know. If they do to our other equals what they do to you, be patient and have hope in God. You tell me you have provided for 30 ducats. Take 30 more of mine. Send me the balance here. Take them to Bonifacio Fazzi and have them given to Giovanni. You'll get a receipt slip for the aforesaid money. Put it in your letter when you write me. Attend to living, and if you can't have the honors of the country as the other citizens do, let it suffice you to have bread and live virtuously in Christ and poorly as I do here, for I live meanly. I don't bother about life or honor, that is, the world, and I live with the greatest toil and a thousand worries. It has now been about 15 years since I've had a happy hour. I've done everything to help you, and you have never recognized it or believed it. God pardon us all. I'm ready to do the same again as long as I live, so long as I can. Yours, Michelangelo, sculptor in Rome." These are unfinished, so-called slaves, which were to be attendant figures in the tomb. "To the Cardinal Giulio de' Medici in Rome, 15th day of July, 1518. Dear Most Reverend Monsignor, as I am expecting delivery of a fair amount of marble this year for the work at San Lorenzo in Florence, and as I have not found a place suitable for working it, either within the precincts of San Lorenzo or nearby, I open negotiations for the purchase of a plot of land near Santa Caterina from the chapter of Santa Maria della Fiore in order to build one. This land is costing me some 300 broad ducats in gold, and I've been after the said chapter for 2 months to get possession of the said land. They made me pay 60 ducats more for it than it's worth, pretending they regret it, but saying they cannot contravene the terms of the bull of sale they had from the Pope. Now, if the Pope is issuing bulls granting license to rob, I beg your most reverend lordship, get one issued to me too. I have more need of it than they. But if this is not customary, I beg you to have justice done me in this wise. This land which I've taken is not large enough for my purpose. The chapter has some more land behind it, and I therefore beg your lordship to have another plot given me, whereby I may recover the amount by which they overcharge me for the one I've bought. And if anything is owing them, I want no favors. As regards the undertaking, the beginnings are quite difficult." He's discussing here the famous Medici tombs. Of two young men, Giuliano and Lorenzo. to Bertoia da Feliciaia in Rome. Berto, I commend me to you and thank you for the services and kindnesses I have received from you. With all that lies in my power, I'm always at your command. Things are going tolerably well here. One may say the road is finished, since there is little left to do. That is to say, there are a few boulders, or rather outcrops, to be cut away. One outcrop is where the road, which leads from the river, debouches on the old road to Romagno. Another outcrop is a little beyond Romagno on the way to Saravezza, where a large boulder is lying across the road. And another is near the last houses in Saravezza, going towards Corvara. In addition, there are a few places to be leveled with small pickaxes. All these being short jobs, it could be done in a fortnight if the Scarpellini were worth anything. As to the marsh, it's about a week since I was there when they were filling it in to the worst of their ability. If they have gone on with it, I reckon they must have finished it by now. As to the marbles, I've got the quarried column safely down into the riverbed 50 braccia from the road. It has been a bigger job than I anticipated to sling it down. Some mistake was made in slinging it, and a man had his neck broken and died instantly. Nearly cost me my life. The other column was almost blocked out, and I discovered a flaw in it, which left me short. It was necessary to cut back into the hillside again to the full width to avoid the flaw. This I've done. I hope now it'll be all right, and I can block it out to the full length. I think that's all, except to ask you, when you speak to His Magnificence Jacopo Salviati, to make my excuses for not having written, as I have nothing as yet that I care to write about. So I'm not doing so. The site here is very rough to quarry, and the men are very inexperienced in any operation of this kind. A great deal of patience will therefore be needed for some months until the mountains are tamed and the men trained. Then we shall get on faster. It's sufficient that what I have promised I shall perform without fail and shall produce the finest work that has ever been produced in Italy, with God's help. Since I wrote, I've had an answer from the men at Pietrasanta who undertook to quarry a specific amount of marble some 6 months ago. They will neither do the quarrying nor return me the 100 ducats I gave them. It seems to me that they have taken a bold course, which, as I see it, would not have been taken without support. So I intend to come to Florence on the 8th, to the 8th, that is, the rulers of Florence, and demand damages from them for this dishonesty. I don't know whether it can be done, but I hope this magnificent Jacopo Salviati will help me get justice. These two monumental figures of Lorenzo and Giuliano have day and night and twilight and dawn as allegorical figures perched on the edge of the tomb. The figures look to be about ready to fall off. This is primarily because the tomb was never finished and there were meant to be a number of river gods down below, which visually would have acted as a support and a continuation of the rhythm of these figures as they slide off the top. Unfortunately today, well, mixed feelings, fortunately and unfortunately. This was designed, the whole chapel was designed, including the architecture by Michelangelo, to have a special kind of light which would have thrown a very dramatic statement across all the features of the figures and made a profound contrast that he was interested in. Today, with artificial tubes and lights and spots all over the place, we can see better the mark of his chisel, we can identify the presence of his hand, but we lose Michelangelo's spirit. This is Giuliano, who's a very outgoing one of the two. Large, brooding figure of day, and a very sleepy, magnificent figure of night, with the mask of night huddled underneath her figure. To Pope Clement VII in Rome. Most Blessed Father, as intermediaries are often the cause of grave misunderstandings, I have accordingly made bold to write to your holiness without their intervention about the tombs here at San Lorenzo. I declare I not know which is preferable, a disadvantage which proves to be a benefit or an advantage which proves to be a hindrance. I am certain, idle and unreasonable though I am, that had I been left to carry on as I began, all the marbles for the said work would be in Florence today, blocked out as required, and with less expense than has been so far incurred, and they would be of a quality as admirable as the others I brought here. Now I see that it's going to be a long business, and I don't know how it'll proceed. Therefore, Should matters turn out to be displeasing to your holiness, I desire to be exonerated. Since I have no authority here, I don't think I should have the blame either. If your holiness wishes me to accomplish anything, I beg you not to have authority set over me in my own trade, but to have faith in me and give me a free hand. Your holiness will see what I shall accomplish and the account I shall give of myself. Stefano has finished the lantern of the chapel of the said Lorenzo here and uncovered it. It is universally admired by everyone, as I hope it will be by your holiness when you see it. We're having the ball, which surmounts it, made about a braccia in diameter, and in order to vary it from the others, I've decided to have it made with facets, and this is now being done. Your holiness's servant, Michelangelo, sculptor in Florence. To Master Giovanni Francesco Fattucci in Rome. Master Francesco, I know Spina has written, this week, this coming week, I shall have the sacristy figures that are rough-hewn covered up because I want to leave the sacristy free for these marble cutters. I want them to begin to install the other tomb opposite the one that's installed and is completely cut, or almost. And during this time that they are installing it, I thought the vault might be made. I thought with a lot of hands it would be done in 2 or 3 months. I'm not an expert. After this coming week, our Lord can send Master Giovanni da Udine at his convenience if he thinks it's to be done, since I shall be ready. As regards the entrance hall, this week 4 columns have been installed, 1 previously. The tabernacles will be a little behind, but still, in 4 months from now, I think it will be finished. The ceiling would be begun now, but the linden wood is still not good. They will hurry the seasoning as much as possible. I work as much as possible. In 2 weeks, I'll have the other captain begun. Then, of the important things, only the 4 rivers will be left. Those are the figures which were never completed. The 4 figures on the sarcophagi, the 4 figures on the ground that are the rivers, the 2 captains, that is the famous statues of Lorenzo and Giuliano, and Our Lady that goes on the tomb at the head of the chapel, these are the figures I would wish to make with my own hands. Of these, I have begun 6, and I have enough energy to do them in a reasonable time. Meanwhile, have the others done that are not so important. Nothing else occurs to me. Give my greetings to Giovanni Spina. Ask him to write a little to Figiovanni. Ask him not to pull off the carters and send them to Pescia, because we shall be left without stone. Also, not to bewitch the stone cutters, so to make them like him, by saying to them, those others have little consideration for you, making you work until evening, now that the night comes at the 2nd hour after sunset. It's hard for us to make one of them work with 100 eyes, and even that one is spoiled by somebody being soft-hearted. So, patience. May God not make displeasing to me what is not displeasing to him. This is a poem on the death of his father, who died 1531. Michelangelo is now 56. Though earlier my heart has pressed me so, for my safety I thought I could express my great sorrow through my weeping woe. But fortune, at the fountain of that moistness, now makes her roots and veins swollen and fat through death no slighter punishment or sadness. And as you depart, I must separate between the sun dying first and you thereafter, of whom I'm speaking, tongue, pen, and lament. One was brother to me, you were our father. Love strains toward him, to you my obligation. I don't know which hurt strains or irks me further. My brother's painted in my recollection, and it carves you alive inside my heart, for face and heart more stain and more affliction. And yet, as for the debt that gives me quiet, my brother paid it green, and you mature. Death in old age makes others feel less hurt. Since heaven has now removed you from our burden, have some regret for me, who am dead while living, since through your means it wished me to be born. You're dead of dying and are made divine, nor do you fear a change in life or wish. I hardly write it without envying. By having died, my dying you will teach. Dear Father, I see you in my thought, where the world hardly ever lets us reach. Some think that death's the worst, but it is not. For one whose final day grace will transform to his first eternal near the holy seat, where by God's grace I imagine and assume and hope to see you are, if reason draws my own cold heart out from the earthly slime. And if the best of love in heaven increases between father and son as virtues all grow. Any place covered, any sheltered room, whatever any solid circumscribes, preserves the night as long as day's alive against the sun playing its glittering game. And if she's overmatched by fire or flame, by the sun she'll be ravished and deprived of her divine look. Baser things besides can break her more or less, even any worm. The rough plowman labors with his blade, whatever is open for the sun, to blaze on 1,000 different seeds and different plants. Man can be planted only in the shade. Therefore, the nights are holier than the days, as man is worth more than all other fruits. This is the madrigal. If the soul truly from its body free may come back in another's only a few short hours, so for a second time to live and die, will she then, whom I see as a lady of great beauty, in returning as now, show such despite? If she will hear my plea, I would expect her mercy to be on the abounding of all hardness stripped. I think if she has shut her beautiful eyes, she'll have in the renewing pity upon my death when she knows dying. Michelangelo was called back to Rome in his 60s to paint the end wall of the Sistine Chapel. And a very interesting question arises. How did he feel after having labored for 4 years on his back 30 years before doing a ceiling, to destroy part of that ceiling in order to paint the end wall? For at the very top of the end wall, the very top of this Last Judgment, which you see on the screen, had been painted two scenes from the original scheme for the ceiling. But in order to make the Last Judgment more powerful, he destroyed those and repainted it with the upper part of the Last Judgment scene. One very interesting detail in this part of the painting, a poet of great talent and energy, Pietro Aretino, had been quite antagonistic to Michelangelo. They'd had battles and arguments about art and life in general. And at one time, one of their arguments ended with Pietro Aretino saying, "By God, Michelangelo, I'll have your skin." Well, when Michelangelo painted the Last Judgment, immediately to the right of Christ, below his right foot, stands a figure of Bartholomew, Saint Bartholomew, who was martyred by being skinned alive. The portrait on the body of Saint Bartholomew is that of Pietro Aretino, and the skin that Pietro is holding has on it the portrait of Michelangelo. This is a madrigal written on the death of Vittoria Colonna. Michelangelo is now 72. "So not to need from many to reclaim that gathered beauty, other there was none, it has been made alone to a high, pure lady under a bright cloak. For having to redeem from all the world, heaven scarce could be paid back. Now in a short speck, no, in a second, God from the unwatchful earth again has seized it from our eyes removed. But memory cannot fade, despite the body's death, of all she has written, sacred, sweet, beloved. Cruel pity you prove, if the ugly had such loans from heaven as she, and now called them through death, we all would die." And the trumpets, not the Last Judgment, do blow. An epigram. "I prize my sleep, and more my being stone. As long as hurt and shamefulness endure, I call it lucky not to see or hear. So do not waken me, keep your voice down." To Leonardo. He's now 74. "Leonardo, as I was unable to read your last letter or to make it out, I threw it in the fire. I'm therefore unable to reply to you anything about it. I have written and told you several times that every time I get a letter from you, I'm thrown into a fever before I manage to read it. I therefore forbid you to write me again from now on, and if you have anything to communicate to me, get hold of someone who knows how to write. I have other things to occupy me without having to struggle over your letters. Messer Giovan Francesco writes me that you would like to come to Rome for a few days. I'm astonished that you can get away, having formed a partnership, as you wrote me, so take care not to waste the money I sent you. Similarly, Gizmondo also ought to take care of it, since those who haven't earned it don't appreciate it. One knows this from experience, because the majority of those born into wealth waste it and come to ruin. So wake up and try to realize what a miserable life of toil I lead, old as I am. Recently, a Florentine citizen came to me and suggested one of Ginori's daughters, who had been suggested to you in Florence, and whom he tells me you like. I don't believe this is true, but again, I'm unable to advise you about it, as I have no information. It would not please me at all that you should take a wife, someone whose father, if he could afford to give her a suitable dowry, wouldn't give her to you. I should like anyone wishing to give you his daughter or wife to wife to think of doing so for yourself and not for your possessions. It seems to me that in seeking a wife, it's for you to take the initiative and not for others to make proposals when no dowry can be offered. So, it's only soundness of mind and body and nobility of birth and upbringing that you need to consider, besides seeing what her parents are like, which is very important. That's all I have to say. Commend me to Messer Giovan Francesco, Michelangelo Buonarroti in Rome. Epigram. Those who don't care for leaves should not come here in May. This is a letter to Vasari, the painter, the man who wrote the first note I read to you and who did his tomb. To Messer Giorgio, most excellent painter in Florence. Michelangelo is now 79. Messer Giorgio, dear friend, you will say rightly that I am old and foolish, and in wishing to write sonnets, but because many people say that I'm in my second childhood, I've tried to fulfill my part. From your letter, I realize the love you bear me. You may be sure that I should be glad to lay my feeble bones beside my father's, as you beg me. But if I were to leave here now, it would be the utter ruin of the fabric of St. Peter's, a great disgrace and a greater sin. When the structure is completely taken shape so that it cannot be altered, I hope to do as you suggest, unless, of course, it be a sin to keep a few sharks waiting who anticipate my early departure. On the 19th day of September, 1554, your Michelangelo Buonarroti in Rome. And this is the sonnet that he sent to his friend. My death must come, but when I do not know. Life's short, and little life remains for me. Fain would my flesh abide, my soul would flee heavenward, for still she calls on me to go. Blind is the world, and evil here below overwhelms and triumphs over honesty. The light is quenched, and quenched too is bravery. Lies reign, and truth has ceased her face to show. This is the road to Damascus, the conversion of Paul. Painted in 1542. Michelangelo is now 80. With a vexatious, heavy load put down, O my dear Lord, and from the world set free, I, like a fragile craft, turn to you, weary from fearful tempest into gentle calm. The thorns and nails, the left and the right palm, your face, benign, humble, filled with pity, pledge that for great repentance there is mercy. To the sad soul, give hope you will redeem. Let not your holy eyes with justice watch my past. Let not your immaculate ear make your unsparing arm stretch out to it. Only your blood my trespass wash or touch, and more abound as my old age grows more, with ready aid and pardon absolute. Michelangelo designed the square that you see here, the capital line, when he was about 71. Though it often happens, great desire will promise to my so many years still many more, it won't keep death from always drawing near, and where he gives less pain, he hurries less. Why wait on living longer to rejoice if God in misery only we adore? For our good luck, only by lasting longer, does us more harm the more that it delights. If sometimes by your grace that burning zeal, O my dear Lord, comes to attack my heart, which gives my soul comfort and reassurance, since my strength's no use to me at all, to turn to heaven at once would then be right, for with more time, goodwill has less endurance. A sonnet of thanks. By the mule, by the candles, by the sugar, not to mention a giant flask of Malmsey, so far outmatched is all my property that the scales to St. Michael I'll restore. My sails collapse so in the too fair weather that my frail boat without a wind at sea loses its pathway and appears to be a bit of wood in the rough, cruel water. Considering the great gift and the kindness, the food, the drink, the traveling so often, meeting and satisfying all my wants, oh, dear my Lord, clearly in terms of fairness, to give you all I am would still be nothing. It is no present when we pay our debts. Great line. Michelangelo called back to Rome to do the great dome, which is his design. It's a letter to Vasari. The clerk of works, Giorgio, took the centering that was marked in red to be the reconstruction of the whole vault. He is, by the way, now 83. Afterwards, when they began to approach the half tondo, which is in the middle of the said vault, it came short, owing to the mistake made over the said centering, as may be seen here in the drawing, because it was supported by one centering only, where there should have been a number, which are here marked in black on the drawing. Owing to this mistake, the vault has gone so far ahead that a number of blocks will have to be taken down, for there is no brickwork in the said vault, but only travertine, and the diameter of the tondi, without the frame which surrounds them, is 22 palmi. The great contribution of Michelangelo to this church is the dome, but you can't see it unless you go back in the papal gardens or take an airplane, because later, a century later, they added a bay to St. Peter's, bringing the facade way out into the piazza, and with the facade out that far from the dome, as you approach the church, the dome disappears, and you can't see it. Michelangelo would be very sad. As the model, such as I make for everything, was exact, this mistake ought never to have been made, but it happened through my not being able to go there often enough, owing to my old age. Whereas I believe that the said vault would now be finished, it will not be finished till the end of this winter. And if one could die of shame and grief, I should not be alive. I beg you to explain to the Duke why I am not now in Florence, although I am detained by other things more than I can say. Your Michelangelo in Rome. This is a letter to the Lord Cardinal of Carpi. Most illustrious, most reverend, my much cherished Lord and Master, Master Francesco Mendini told me yesterday that your most illustrious and most reverend Lordship has said that the construction of St. Peter's could not be going worse than it was going, a thing that really grieved me a great deal because you've not been told the truth. Besides, I desire more than all other men as I ought that it should go well. And if I don't deceive myself, I believe I can truthfully assure you, with regard to the work being done now, it could not be going better. But since perhaps my own interest and old age can easily deceive me, he is now 85, and thus unwillingly harm or prejudice the above-mentioned construction, I propose to ask permission from His Holiness, our Lord, as soon as I can, to withdraw, nay, rather to speed up time. I wish to entreat, as I am now doing, that Your most illustrious and most reverend Lordship may please to free me from this vexation, which by command of the popes, as you know, I have been willingly without payment for 17 years, in which time one may plainly see how much has been done through my labor on the aforesaid construction. If I can effectively beg your permission to give up the work, you could never do me a greater single kindness. And with all reverence, I humbly kiss the hand of your most illustrious and most reverend Lordship. At home, Rome, September 13, 1560, your most illustrious and most reverend Lordship's humble servant. It's a letter to Leonardo. Leonardo, I wrote to acknowledging the Trebbiano and saying at the end that I should be glad to learn how Francesca is, but I've had no answer. And now, because I'm an old man, he was now 86, and as you know, I should like to do something in Florence for the welfare of my soul. That is to say, give alms, since there's nothing else one can do that I know of. For this purpose, I wish to have a certain number of scudi made payable in Florence, so that you can go and pay, or rather give in charity, where there's most need. The said scudi will amount to about 300. I have asked Bandino, who's the one who will make them payable for me there, about it, and he replied that within four months, he would take them himself. I do not want to delay as long as that. So if you have some Florentine friends to whom I could safely give them to give to you there, let me know, and I'll do this. Advise me of the receipt. On the 18th day of July, 1561, Michelangelo Buonarroti in Rome. The last three or four major pieces of Michelangelo's are all pietas. My course of life already has attained, through stormy seas and in a flimsy vessel, the common port at which we land to tell all conduct's cause and warrant, good or bad. So that the passionate fantasy which made of art a monarch for me and an idol was laden down with sin, now I know well, like what all men against their will desired. What will become now of my amorous thoughts, once gay and vain, as toward two deaths I move, one known for sure, the other ominous. There's no painting or sculpture now that quiets the soul that's pointed toward that holy love that on the cross opened its arms to take us. Thank you for coming.